thanks, of course, to the Alumni Association of Yeshiva and its representatives here who continue to extend their warmth of support, their presence in our lives, which is always so important, and especially in trying times like this. So we have to talk to them. So we have to talk to the Alumni Association. And on to the questions. We obviously, as Jay said, have extremely qualified sources of wisdom and direction in chinuch. And let me dive into the first segment, which is about learning. Rabbi Rosh Hashiva, you'll forgive. This is a Neir Yisrael event. I'm going to serve the first one to Shagir Shadiah. Do you have any advice regarding how to fulfill the mitzvah of Hishinantam Levanecha? Specifically, what content should we cover at which ages? And overall, what is the goal of father-son learning?
I want to thank Eisenstadt for hosting us, and I personally would like to be sitting over there listening to Rav Aaron myself. And I'm saying the truth. I say that that's really how I feel. But I have to get a paycheck. the goal of learning with kids, and if I could, I saw there's a question here which morphs in this as well, but the goal of learning with kids for parents is, of course, Shinantmu Vanecha. You know, the Chazal say Elo HaTalmidim. It means your children, your students. And my wife used to always tell me it also means your children. And there's truth to that. And for all parents, whether you're Rabbeim or if you're busy with the klal, with so many responsibilities, spending time with our children is essential. And, you know, true confessions, I'm sure that I could spend more time with my kids. You know, the idea of father and son learning is, I think, dependent on the particular kid and the way the parent relate. In other words, if a parent and a kid can find common things to learn that they both enjoy, then it's very ideal. At the same time, sometimes there's personality differences, pressures, etc., where it actually can be better to have someone else learn with a person's kid. If the kid wants, of course, to learn with the parent, not that the father should say no, but when it comes too much pressure and becomes a negative experience, which can happen, right, then I believe that one should be wise and not just say, well, that's what I have to do. The job of the parent is to make sure this kid learns, and if the personality differences are such that it's not going to work, so then accept it. And it doesn't mean you can't spend time with that kid anyhow. You can spend time playing games, you can spend time going places. Giving time with our kids is essential, but the learning is only going to be positive when it works. When it works, it's great. When it doesn't, be practical. But if I could just, I know this is another question was asked, and I'd like to hear what Ryan has to say about this, but there's something over here where I take exception to in the question. It says, Jewish fatherhood lends itself more to greater interaction with one's sons than one's daughters. As a father of 7 daughters who are all married, Baruch Hashem, I take exception on this statement. And I believe that the fact that we may not be learning sometimes with our daughters, sometimes people do also, it's not a true statement, and it shouldn't be looked at that way. There is no difference in terms of the responsibility that a father has to sons, and he has to daughters as well. He doesn't have to learn with them in the same way, but spending time with them, developing their hashkafa, the unique bond that fathers and daughters can have, as the same way that mothers and sons can have, which I think is even the clearest for this in Kabbalah, which Rav Aaron can answer better than me, but Rabbi Lansky has told me that there is special yachas that fathers have with daughters and mothers with sons, and to that responsibility should be taken very seriously, and spending time with daughters is of utmost importance and appreciation, and it's not less in any way, shape, or form than it should be with sons as well. And I don't accept the statement, and I think that all of us should even when your daughters are married, which ours are, Baruch Hashem, I speak to my daughters regularly, some more, some less, but we talk all the time, and they live in many different places, but we talk. And that's an essential thing that as parents have to keep in touch with kids and daughters as well, and there's absolutely no difference in my mind. Goodbye.
Rabbi, if I can just ask you perhaps to be Moslem on what Rav Schweigerson was talking about, to perhaps fill out one of the questions here, is how do we strike a balance between encouraging our children to learn and also positioning them to love learning long term? I would say, as it applies to both sons and to daughters, what practical advice does Rebbe have so that we can create that experience?
So first of all, as the yeshiva, we owe tremendous hakar satov to Nei Yisrael. We've gotten so much from them in terms of Magidish Shurim, personnel, help in many other things, and in setting up administrative stuff and things like that. They've been tremendous. The Rev Naftali Newberg Zayin Vracha was extremely paternal to me. I spoke to him a few times when I came, and he was extremely... He passed on. Rabbi Blaise Yudel Zayin Vracha was a fatherly figure to him, and he sort of passed it on. And it's tremendous. We had some very warm conversations when I came. Was things are still very uncertain, and over the years we've gotten a lot from them, a lot of Talmidim here that have made the community. So big Yashar Koyach to yourself. Obviously, the Yashar Koyach to Rav Eisenstadt. Many Dvarim Shebetusha come through here, and also the Maila of having Reb Azi do the questions is, even if you don't like the answers, but him just singing the questions, even if you walk away just with the pleasant intonations on the questions, it's yes. And finally, I don't think I need to explain it. It's not about Kabbalah, it's about wisdom, and there are very few people as wise as Reb Shraga that so many difficult issues come his way, and he handles so many different issues. So it's a bracha to have him and everything about him in the general area and here. Look, I want to speak apropos to what he said. Pass on some more nekudas. Whenever we're in academic atmosphere, so in algebra 1, the goal is that kids should know algebra 1, whatever that entails. The goal in Torah is first and foremost they should connect to Torah. This is true even of the yeshiva. But a yeshiva as an academic institution is geared towards knowing this, whatever level you decide and so on. When a father is learning with a child, a boy or a girl, the goal is really the pnimius. In other words, so many things come together. A child, at the end of the day, wants the approval of the parent. That the approval of the parent is what makes him go. The disapproval of the parent stops him, and if done enough, gets very frustrated and upset and distraught. That's the mitzvah. Now, 1, 2, you don't need to do it proactively as much as if in your engagement with a child, whatever you really look up to, the child absorbs that. So if you respect a Talmud Chacham, genuinely looking at a person who's a Chacham, a Tzanua, an Anav, a Yare Lekim, then the child will absorb it. If you admire something else, the child will absorb something else, and so on. That is the mitzvah. So, if you, an adult activity, and time with a father is the most precious gift a child can have. I repeat many times, my father was a Holocaust survivor, he was a shamus in a shul. We weren't destitute, we weren't impoverished, but we had what we needed and that was it. It was, you know, that was the mitzvah. But so often my father would take us after the meal at supper and take us for a walk. And we'd go and we'd walk for a half hour, an hour, and come back and talk. My father was, he was older also, so he had sort of a grandfatherly relationship. I think back, I can't think of a happier childhood. My father was always positive. It wasn't that he didn't feel for what's right and wrong, but it was always very positive. And we were happy, and I can't think of anything that we could have had more. And the more I look back at it, the more I hear other people's stories, and I say to myself, you know, I used to think for a long time that this story about children of Holocaust survivors is not true. We had a wonderful childhood. And the answer is closeness, a kesher, and a sense of believing and approval. Now, if you're sitting and learning with the kid, the Moshe is learning, and the kid really struggles with it, I'm not sure that you're the person that should be learning with him. Like Rav Shag said, that might be a good place to get a tutor. Learn something that the kid can do comfortably well. So if it's Mishnayos, we're learning Mishnayos. If the child can do it well with you, then that will build the positive sense about the learning. It doesn't have to learn Chasabatim, but if he likes learning Mishnayos, and you're learning Mishnayos, and you're able to cover more, and he knows, and he understands, it has to be genuine, and he can feel how happy. It's not how much you cover. What you're trying to do is make a positive learning experience, which means it's at a level and a pace that the child does well. The same thing is true with a girl. It's not the message per se. Did you teach Rabbeinu Yoina right or not? It's the sense of it. The things you're talking about, if they're genuine, these are the values you have, and you value her because you're talking to her. You're talking to her as an adult. You're talking to her in a way that it comes across appreciating. Then that will stay there. That's the bedrock. Everything else is either silk or more. Everything else comes on top of that. So the learning relationship of a father and child has nothing to do. You're not tutoring the child. And like Rav Shlager said, many times that becomes a place of frustration, especially if the child has difficulties, he's got ADD, he's got learning difficulties. It becomes very frustrating. You want to learn with the child the things that the child can do reasonably well on, at the pace that they can do reasonably well on. There's a sense of satisfaction and a sense of happiness. Those, I think, are the important pieces.
Right now, there's a time where we're all focusing on tefillah, you know, one of the few things that we can genuinely do for the matzah, of course. Tefillah is a difficult thing, even for adults, probably even more so for children. Do you have any tips or recommendations on how we can create more of a lived and positive experience of tefillah for our children?
The shorter amount of time that you ask a kid to daven, the better. I mean, because I think that if the quality of the tefillah is good, then the kid has a positive feeling from doing it. If he has the kid to say one kapitel tilim and that's it, that's fine. And it's not how much you say, it's not how much time you spend on it, it's making it a positive experience. The more the kid sees how the parent is a misfollow, then the more by example the kid over time will follow. But pushing the kids to daven more is pushing less.
Teenagers also?
Adults, not just teenagers. Teenagers too, but even adults, right? If it's done too much, then it loses the effectiveness, right? You know, it's where we are human, right? You know, of course, I do think that it's important to give over a concept to the kids, to anyone that you come in contact with, is Now, if you had a close relative there, then, you know, you would daven even more.
I'm happy
And we all have close relatives there. Mm-hmm. That's how we have to view other yidden. Right? And if, you know, just imagine, I tell you to imagine you had a brother, a cousin, a first cousin, people really close. And imagine that you had a child there. Just imagine it. And then even the little thing you said, you know, if you, as Alter Rebbe Kelm talks about, there's a concept of Makarev El Hatzir. So you have to make things real. The Gemara says, Yisker Lo Yoyim Hamisa, that if a person is about to do a terrible sin, he should remember Yoyim Hamisa. It doesn't say Yisker Misa, but Yisker Lo Yoyim Hamisa. He's about to do a terrible Aveira. He should imagine that he's at a funeral and that he knows the people there and he's not in the crowd. But that's what the Lo Yoyim Hamisa is. So if a person would imagine if you had a relative there, just close your eyes and imagine if you had a relative there, then that capital becomes more meaningful.
The balance between accepting that they shouldn't necessarily be pushed to stay there the whole time in davening, let's say they come to Shacharis and then leaning and the Musaf on Shabbos morning, but when they step out because they need a breather, it turns into batlanus with all of the other kids, that it's even more counterproductive had they not even come to shul at all, some of the bullying that happens, how do you balance between it's okay not to be inside shul all the time, but when you do step outside of shul, the parents are inside shul, so there's nobody overseeing. So how do you educate your child? What do you say to a child that when they take their break, they're still productive outside, not
and outside in front of the house, there could be no bullying. Only even being in the shul.
The
neighbors,
usually outside of a house that you don't have 25 kids all together with the group thinking.
So we're going to get to bullying a little bit later, so let me rephrase
the question wasn't intended to be about the structure of
children in shul, like how should one mediate that tension of wanting a child to have a shul experience, yet at the same time the recognition that if the parents are davening, the kids are going to have some level of gayers.
I think every kid is different and every situation is different. These are not... I don't know a tailor-made answer for such a thing. Again, because for one kid, let out more, of another kid out less. It's not a... everybody's too individual to give an intelligent answer.
The question of teenagers was brought up, and of course the yeshiva is responsible for an institution that not only has the yeshiva gdola, who may or may not sometimes act like teenagers, but there's actually teenagers in that middle school, high school, for both boys and girls. So the question here is, to what degree should teenagers be given discretion to make their own decisions, including but not limited to which high school / yeshiva to attend?
I think to a large degree, they should certainly feel that they're making a decision. So let's give an example. If there are two high schools that they could go to that are reasonably within the same range. In other words, you can't say that you'd be really, that one is totally not what you expect. Then I think, even if you think one would be better than the other, if a child makes that decision, they have a better chance of wanting to live up to it. You can help sometimes a child understand maybe just going because all his friends are going. Friends, let's give an example. A kid's friends are all very smart, very bright. They want to go to a very competitive high school, or Beis Medrash. And you think that this kid will not do well there. So to tell him that you're not as good as the other ones, not a good mahalach. But let's say you feel different ones. So you can say, listen, I think the other place might be more kifiruchacha. I'll tell you what, try it for Elul, and you have my word that if the end of Elul or whatever time it is, or Hanukkah, you don't like it, then we'll switch over, something like that. You want, usually if the kid is in the right place, I like it, but the more a child can feel, a teenager can feel that they were part of the decision, the better chance that they'll live up to it and they'll want to make it work. So I'm a big believer, you have to begin, a child till teenage age is very much dependent. He wants to do what his father wants him, unless he doesn't want to. But his the person that makes him into who he is the parents' sense of him. A teenager, it says of Kein Yazevich Avimoy, he wants to assert himself. He wants to do what, quote unquote, he and all other teenagers think is right, not what you as a parent think is right. So the chachma is to get him to feel that he made the decision, and he should. He should begin to take responsibility and make those decisions. You obviously want to understand what's out of the pale and how you can cleverly sort of move him towards the direction you want him to.
I just want to add that sometimes you should try to be a parent that's a tzaddik, and a tzaddik is malachta nasa saideh achor. And sometimes if the Rebbe is really close with the kid, then the Rebbe can sometimes get the kid, not always, but sometimes get the kid to want the thing that you want as well, and when it comes from somebody else, sometimes it's easier to swallow.
I lived in a building together with my brother-in-law, Rabbi Yamin Kalbach. So the deal was, I would speak to his kids, he would speak to my kids, because his kids knew I was the wiser of the two, and my kids knew he was the wiser. So it was a very good analogy. So like this was, each kid had the confidant that was out of the loop and smarter. So it was a good situation.
In general, I think that I'd like to do a study on the Mila of brothers-in-law, which I think is an excellent institution because it has the Mila of being a brother without being raised together. So many times you find brothers-in-law, even if you're not neighbors, like your Byron was, the brother-in-laws can have a special connection, and with your kids too.
Nowadays, there are unfortunately more divorces and broken engagements than there were in the past. There are probably few people in the yeshiva belt that unfortunately are on the inside of these very painful experiences, both for the adults who are going through this and the children. What can we do and what should we do to prepare our sons and daughters for engagement and marriage to minimize the likelihood of these very negative outcomes?
I'm going to take exception to the statement. So I married Rakshem Ritzashem soon 50 years. And at least 50 years, and maybe even right before Shidduchim, I still remember every year I keep on hearing there are more divorces than ever. And I've heard this for the last 50 years. I'm not even convinced that it's true. Even though the statement says it, I'm still not convinced. I do believe that their cholesterol has grown so much. So therefore, it looks like there are more divorces. But percentage-wise, I'm not saying anything scientific. I'm just not sure that the statement's true. But the fact that it should shake everybody up when there is a divorce or hearing about unhappy marriage, and then there are dysfunctional families, which probably was the case many years ago as well, but there's so many more now. So I don't accept the premise 100% that there are more. But having said that, still, in my mind, any time a couple comes to me with a Shalom Bayis thing, the first thing that I say to them is that everyone is an expert at what the other one is doing wrong. But I'd like to start by you telling me what you could do better. Today, a bachur comes to me and says, I'm 20 years old. I don't want to date for a couple of years. How can I get ready for marriage? A bachur asked me that punk today, not because of this. He just asked me that today. And I told him, he said, which marriage book should I read? I said, no, don't read any marriage books right now. Right? But work, find whichever midos you can work on to make yourself better. And the better a person you are, the better you'll be for marriage also. When you get closer to Shidduchim, you can start talking about the differences between men and women, getting into marriage, etc. But right now, work on yourself. We as parents and as a mechanchim have to push our children and talmidim and everybody to say, no one's perfect. Life is about making ourselves better, and that's what you do. And, marriage does not make unhappy people happy. It makes happy people happier. If a person works on himself more, to make himself more happy by working on his own midos and his own things. And I just want to add one thing, because I'm sure Byron has many more smart things to say about this. But I just want to say that I think that an Eitzah Teva, when you tell anyone to work on something that they're weak on, tell them, work on a mida that you're great at to be even better. And when you feel good about the things that you're good at, it gives you more kayach to work on the things that you need help as well.
Any additional thoughts on this question of preparing for
I would make a few things. I very much resonates the idea that we don't know, and it's a point that I've tried to speak about a lot of places. You know, with Baruch Hashem, we became an extraordinary klal. It used to be a rav was a rav of a town with 30, 40 families. He knew everything, everybody. From people were a few thousand. You pretty much could put your finger, a smart person put his finger on the pulse and make a statement that was reasonable about. Today, it's impossible. And we don't know. So we should know. It is important that we have the facts in front of us to know what to do. We don't have any way. We don't have a mentality to gather facts as shidduchim issues, shidduchim crisis. So the people involved who actually did now, that's it's just about finished, a very, very rigorous study of it. So we know the facts. It's like I told somebody, if someone asked me between 1 and 1 million, how many people do you think are divorced? I would say 500,000. It's only, I have no, and we're clueless. We're trying, Belia and her was such a big clock, and no one knows. Is it Takam? It's true, we hear a lot more, but that could go to the numbers. So that's a real issue, and it's something we have to do. There is a point, a nakuda that I think a lot of times, sitting in yeshiva, a Rebbe can figure out, or a girls in a girls' school can figure out who's likely to have issues. It's very clear. There's this person in the classroom doesn't get along with anybody. There's a person in here who is like walking eggshell. Now, as a Rebbe, you have two choices. One choice is to roll up your sleeves, sit down with him. He'll get very upset with you, angry with you. His parents will call you up that you're being right of him. And in minimal, it's spending dozens of hours. Choice two is to forget about it and tell him he's a great kid and go on. I'll tell you where my Yetzirah is. And especially, you know, since somebody else could be having parnasa off this kid, well, for me it's extra credit. I know exactly what I want to do. It is, you know, you can detect many times people that will have real issues. Now, it used to be that a Rebbe figure was very dominant and what he said was Kodesh Kodashim. And if he told the parents he's selfish or whatever it is, Bal Korchi and Amen, and this and that, Kulai Vulai. It doesn't work like that anymore. And have the time to deal with so many. I tell people, when I came to the Mi Yeshiva was huge. There were 300 people in the Beis Medrash. I walked in, I was shaking. I came from RJJ, it was a full Beis Medrash of 80 people maybe. And I walked in, 300, that included everybody. And so I spoke to Nachman Lenin almost every day. If I wanted to talk to Reb Chaim, I went down. If I wanted to talk to the person called my Shrei later, it was no problem. Reb Chaim Kamil was here, Reb Ari Finkel was there. It was no problem. Today, it doesn't exist. So I and everybody else in Shiva, we had people that would sort of be able to tell us off or on, whatever. I remember a Volba came to my father-in-law, a Volba, when he became sort of, started saying shmuzim, would come every yontif to every Alek Halmai to say good yontif to my father-in-law, shmuz. So he told my father-in-law, I'd love if I could repeat it in Yiddish, but he had like a very, you know, his voice was like that to him. Resonator, he said, Amol, they used to know that a Mashkiach's job is to sand and polish a bacha down. Today, a new word, Mashber. Mashber means that he's depressed, or he just, you know, you look at a bacha, he's finished, he has a Mashber. says every bocha needs two mashgichim, one to hold him up from the right side, one from the left side. That was the way he is it. But that it doesn't work today when somebody tells you, you know, that you're good for nothing. Somebody wrote, they wrote about Rameh Chodesh, his biography is written by his daughter, so it's very good. It was really written very open, and there's a story there that's incredible. People today won't even understand the story. He called a bachur in. Bachur was an okay bachur. The bachur himself told the story, and he said, Rav Meir gave him musa. He said, you're not learning the way you should. B'chol b'chol. A week later, he calls him down, and he says, I've noticed some superficial improvements. It's not what I'm talking about. The third week, he calls him down, and he says, listen, you have one more chance. If nothing changes, then I will reluctantly have to conclude that you're not a bacha who can take Musar, and I will never, ever tell you a word of Musar again. I'm warning you. So this is your last chance to make it right, or else you never hear a word of criticism from me again. I don't think people could hear a story like that. It's not even... But we don't have that mechanism. So a lot of people want to marry. I cringe. You know, people, you know, this is so who's there to help? Big question. It also... I have a feeling there's in the hadrachas and so on, it's an open field. Anybody who feels can do it. There's a lack of a practical understanding of it and a lack. You have some people walk into it and they basically are looking for a glatt kosher version of fulfilling the taiva and so on. No idea whatever the taiva is, no idea that of Kedusha and so on. On the other hand, you have an approach that talks about the very high in Yanim, but not the practical learning. Marriage is about learning to get along with a person that is different than you. First of all, believe it or not, men and women are different. And secondly, no two people are the same, even if the same gender. And that's the process. That's the educational process. And learning, this is going to be what it is. It's going to be a process, and you will be so much the better because you learn how to understand someone that you don't understand. And that's what it's about. So being able to explain it, being able to bring it down, lemaisa, is something that understands what it is, Kedusha Zabai, is a melacha, it's a very kasha shev mikdash. Well, what time zone is it?
9:15.
At 9:30 I have to be there. So 9:25, okay, right. We'll start. Okay.
I just want to add one point that to say, with all the problems that there are today, I am finding, you know, I think I talked to someone like Haver when we got married 50 years ago. We didn't ask for chaburas about marriage. And today, by us in Yeshiva, and I think in other places too, Chazan comes for chaburas, Shana Rishonim come for chaburas, and the like want to hear. There is much growth by people that want it, and that's a very hopeful sign to me that we can have many, many wonderful homes. Yeah. You know, the first thing I ask any bucker, any couple that comes to me, the second thing after asking what their problem is, I ask them what type of marriage they came from, because very often the ones that have problems, not always, but very often, they come from marriages that were problems, and they swore up and down they wouldn't do the same thing, but they did. So I make an effort when we discuss, that we have welcome over on Friday night, when it's not one-on-one, but there's 40, 50 boys there, I say, if you come from an unhappy home, it's not a guarantee that you're going to be unhappy, but you may have to work harder. If you come from a happy home, you still have to. And we talk about these things to the bathroom in general, over cake and soda, and a lot of boys then will come for help. So if more and more can be done to talk about it generally to people in a positive way, not one-on-one, then the ones that need it the most sometimes will come for help.
I want to add something. I think Rosh Chaim is touching on. There's somebody who does. One of the people we've used successfully a lot of times for issues is in Baltimore, and one of his axioms is your basic reactions to any situation will be the reactions you picked up at home. Whatever you think, whatever complaints or issues you have, but your sense of what is normal is from what you picked up at home. And it's hard to tell, that this is a problem lurking there. There was somebody many years ago, this is 25 years, there was a bacha here, came from an extremely difficult home. And one of the things was the boy's father was a very critical, sharp, difficult person. And I was especially close to, as one of the boys I was especially close to, and I saw an interaction with him and another friend where he was bitter, nasty, angry, cynical, sharp, in ways. And we took a walk, and I told him, I said, you know, you're just repeating it. He started crying, and he says, I promise you, it'll change. And he did. He's Baruch Hashem, he's married, his kids are virgin and mad, but he became one of the softest, kindest people. He was very self-aware and a very determined person. But having that type of understanding, normal to you will be that. I want to share another story apropos to this. It's going back to the point. There was, when I was a younger man, I was at Beer, there was a tremendous tragedy happened. And it started with the Shalom Bayis issue, the real Shalom Bayis issue. It was something that shook everyone. And we brought in for a kind of Sosiris, Rev Gifta, and Rev Shalom Shadron, not Rev Shalom, Rev Shalom of Alba. They both spoke. It was a very, very powerful, very difficult. And Rev Gifta, he was a very powerful speaker. So when we went to ask him to speak, we told him what happened. He said, Der Churm von Dor is that it's mipi sfarim v'loim mipi seifrim. He said, Tel Zerav in his house had two entrances. He had an entrance to his study, where if you wanted to come speak and learning, you went there, which was usual. And once a year, whatever, as you came into the living room, to the dining room, you ate with, I don't know exactly what, but you got a sense of family, you got a sense of this. In other words, basically what he's saying was you learned from personal example what it's like. We don't have, and like I said, we don't have it. So you read, when you read storybooks about Gedolim and so on, yes, Rabbi Kanievsky is an amazing person. So is the Malach Avril. It doesn't mean anything. it's not a role. I tell people, when I read about the Vilna Gaon's Asmada, it's not mechayev me anything. I say to myself, Ashreini Wazich Tzadik Gedolim. When my friend's sitting and learning and I'm leaving, that's when I get very, that's when it we need to be able to. So one of the milos of the mir was, there were a lot of young alight. You got to feel for different dynamics. You're invited a lot. You got to feel today again where it's a different world. You don't have that contact. You don't. We saw real gedolim interact with wives and people. I want to tell you a story I just read. For some reason, people today don't believe that real gedolim had feelings. When I try to read the first letter of the Rambam, people say can't be that he had friends. I just read a story. This is written about Moshe Chodesh, Remeah's son. He was a relative of mine through marriage. This relative, we were very close. And they're writing about his in-laws was Reb Lapin, Reb Lapin, and that was my cousin, and Reb Zentova. She was Reb Ella Mishkovsky's sister, a daughter of Krinkarov. Krinkarov was a cousin of Reb Chaim Moshe. So whenever Rebbe Zentova would come to Vilna, she would stay with Reb Chaim Moshe. She said one late night, she was in her room or she was sitting somewhere there, and she saw, like from the corner of her eye, she saw him, he walked over to the wall, to the break, from some, he walked over and he lifted up, there was a picture covered, he lifted up, looked at it for a few moments, sighed, put it back, and went back to him. It was a picture of his daughter who had passed away. He had one daughter. She was 18 years old when she died. She was a gem. She was a jewel. She got sick, and she was nifta. And people write in the Sfarim, which is true, they write in all the books about how he carried on with his HaKadosh, didn't stop in his net. But how many people would write that he had a picture that he would look up when it was dark at night, and so on. We don't understand what does human regesh look like, the kedusha. What does it look like? It's a whole piece. So we have gedolim. Again, it's not that the stories are not true, but there's a big gap. And how many people? So that the Chaim Isaac carried on Zavaris HaKadosh, that he answered Shilas right before she was nifta. That's something true. But it's also true that he picked up the picture and looked at it. And being able to understand what does regesh, the kedusha, look like, what does things look like, is very important. I'm sorry, it's what time is it?
22.
I just want to end with one thing that, and this is negate to all of us, no matter how long we're married. But even though I tell this to couples who are freshly married, I said, imagine right now, I'm going to get up on the table and yell like a madman. One sentence. I'm not going to do it. Don't get scared. But this is one sentence I would say to make an impression on people. And that is, and remember, I'm up there now. I'm yelling like a wild man at the top of my lungs, so that across the street they're going to hear it, right? That is, there's nothing you will ever give your children, not bar mitzvahs, not chasnas, not Pesach hotels, not dresses, not cars, nothing will give them the same happiness as seeing their parents as a team. Mm-hmm. I just got down. and that is still true for us today, no matter how we are set in our marriages. The more we improve, the children pick it up, and it gives them the best tools by example. And that is something that everyone... We can all. Chaskel Levenstein asked the chassan on the fourth day of Sheverbach, how was Shalom Bayis? And the chassan laughed because he said, I'm married 4 days. He says, I'm married 54 years. I give a cheshbon every day. Right? So I like saying over the story because sometimes I give a cheshbon too when I say over the story. We realize how important our own improving our own marriages is. That will help our children at all ages. Better, obviously, but that's an important takeaway message.
Amen. Thank you very much.